AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. AgriTalk is brought to you by ESN Smart Nitrogen. Learn more about the industry's environmentally smart nitrogen at smartnitrogen.com. And by Resurge, Helena's low-dust humic granule that improves nutrient uptake and plant growth. Energize your soil and elevate your crops with Resurge. The holidays are here. Put a check mark by this season's first turkey for the Florey family because, yeah, it's been consumed. Congress is on recess for Thanksgiving, but that won't delay work on Triple B in the Senate. And the grain markets are off and running to the upside with wheat futures leading the way.
Live from beneath pastoral serene skies via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with Machinery Pete, Greg Peterson. Then it's on to Renewable Fuels Association President and CEO Jeff Cooper. Right after the news, a weather update from Kirk Hinz from BAM WX. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Hey, buddy, how you doing to get this week started?
I got to tell you, the ether was clearly upset about something yesterday. Windy, cold, angry outside.
Yes, it was.
There's almost no apologetically question. Retreating from that position today. It's a gorgeous day in central Iowa. Not a leaf is moving. It's just a great day to be alive, brother.
That's right. It's good stuff.
Let me just sum it up with that.
Yep. Big thank you to my brother and his wife for hosting the first family get-together this season. And I'm not exactly sure how she does that turkey, but it's like delicious. I mean, it's a highlight of the season for us every year, Davis, every year.
I did a fair amount of cooking over the weekend, too, just because, you know, that's what I do when it's cold and restless outside. I made a series of small single-serving meatloafs, and then I whipped up a big batch of mashed potatoes just because I've got people coming over for Thanksgiving.
Yep.
I've got to sharpen up. Got to tighten up.
You bet, man. A good meatloaf. I'm sorry. It's one of my favorite things.
Well, me too. And I did half pork and half beef. Ooh,
look at
delicious.
You.
Delicious.
Look at you. That's outstanding. Yeah, baby. All right, man, let's get to it. We've got a lot to cover today. Greg Peterson coming up in the next segment, and then we'll try to get some clarity on what's going on at EPA with Jeff Cooper at the bottom of the hour. Let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Well, Chip, the global supply chain snarl is beginning to unravel, but shipping, manufacturing, and retail executives say they do not expect to return to more normal operations until next year. That, according to the Wall Street Journal. In Asia, COVID-related factory closures, energy shortages, and port capacity limits have eased in recent weeks. In the U.S., major retailers say they have imported most of what they need for the holidays. Ocean freight rates have retreated from record levels. Still, executives and economists say strong consumer demand for goods in the West, ongoing port congestion in the U.S., and shortages of truck drivers and elevated global freight rates continue to hang over any recovery.
Yeah, you know... It's the ongoing issues that we are dealing with in the country on the supply chain, on the economy, on many of those fronts. It's one of the reasons that President Biden has decided to reappoint Jerome Powell to head up the Fed. He wants the consistency, the continuity, I guess, is what he's looking for there. The markets, by the way, really kind of seem to like it. Dow's up 230 points on the reappointment. I say that while I see a headline on TV that says 33% of Americans approve of Biden's handling of inflation. A whole one-third of us approve of how it's being handled. And this is part of how it's being handled is a reappointment of Powell. And that supply chain is really, it's like you say, it's getting better, but it's still ugly.
Well, the House passed its version of the Build Back Better Act on Friday, which will be changed perhaps significantly in the Senate sometime in December and perhaps later. Now, in the Senate, the key issues are how much and where the House bill will be changed and what decision centrist Joe Manchin will make. Manchin's really in the spotlight on this whole deal.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And he has been for a while, and he's going to stay there until he decides if he is going to go ahead and vote to approve the triple B.
Well, in a Wall Street Journal op-ed, former EPA Administrator Andrew Wheeler opines why the Biden administration is taking so long to make needed decisions regarding the renewable fuel standard. Wheeler summed up his position, writing, quote, "If the administration does not act, Congress needs to step in and revise the RFS in a manner that simplifies the program, particularly the volume requirement versus the small refinery waiver system." He says further delays will jeopardize small refineries, American workers, and the public. Chip?
Yeah, isn't that something? Andrew Wheeler telling sitting administrator Michael Regan how to handle the RFS when, you know, Wheeler's approach was SREs, the small refinery exemptions. And, here's Wheeler saying get the job done. Wow.
Well, China's imports of U.S. soybeans in October came in 77% lower than the same time last year. China's Brazilian bean buys were down 22% from October 2020. Total soybean imports fell 41% from last year amid weak crush margins. China's soybean arrivals in the fourth quarter, that's the prime U.S. shipping season, are expected to remain below year-ago levels as crush margins are negative. And quickly, Chip, Taliban has asked Afghanistan's television channels to stop broadcasting shows featuring women actors. Female news presenters were also ordered to wear headscarves. The Ministry for the Promotion of Virtue and Prevention of Vice insisted that, quote, "these are not rules, but religious guidelines." And finally, President Biden is, quote, "healthy and remains fit to successfully execute the duties of the presidency," his doctors said Friday, after he underwent his routine physical exam and colonoscopy just one day before his 79th birthday. Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in Kirk Hands, meteorologist at BAMWX.com. How are you, Kirk?
I'm awesome, Chip. I'm trying to stay warm out there. It is cold.
Yeah, no doubt about it. 24 degrees here in northeast Iowa this morning. It is chilly. The next 2 months going to tell us what kind of a crop we're going to see out of Brazil this year. What's the greatest risks that they face?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And we're kind of migrating, and I know I've said this before, towards the La Nina like 2017 and 2018. And that was a later onset in terms of the risk for drier. And those areas specifically, we're looking at southern Brazil, Uruguay, southern Paraguay, and especially the major Argentinian croplands. That's the area we're going to be needing to watch as we're going into December, into January. In 17 and 18, just as a reminder, it was almost a shutoff of the tap because of La Nina strengthening towards South America. And I'm seeing similar characteristics of that as we're going over the next 2 months.
Okay. So before we get to that point, though, what does it mean for some of the northern production areas?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely central eastern Brazil, unlike last year, where we are better off on the soil moisture right now. No major concern, I would say, from areas like northern Mato Grosso do Sul, Mato Grosso, Goiás, some of those areas. They have definitely seen beneficial rainfall. And because of the growing dryness down to the south, they will benefit from more of those rains, I would say, oftentimes than not, for, versus the areas down to the south next 2 months.
Okay, very good. Quiet here in the U.S. right now, isn't it?
Almost too quiet. It makes you almost think, we were saying this in the office this morning, like, are we going to pay for this later in winter because of how quiet that it is? It certainly bears watching because this is the time of the year where we'd like to replenish those soil moisture. So no red flags yet. A month from now, we'll have another discussion.
Right. Absolutely. But on my local weather forecast, there just isn't much chance of precipitation over the next week, 10 days. So really quiet.
Absolutely.
Kirk, good stuff, buddy. Thank you so much for your time. Happy Thanksgiving, man.
Likewise. You guys there as well. Look forward to chatting with you.
All right. Good stuff. That's Kirk Hands, BAMWX. We've got Machinery Pete up next.
Every year, humic loss makes it harder for crops to absorb applied nutrients. Resurge from Helena is a low-dust granule that delivers humic compounds to improve nutrient uptake and plant growth. The Resurge granule's superior hardness and uniformity withstands pneumatic applications, allowing for even distribution in your fertilizer and across the acre. Energize your soil and elevate your crops. Contact your Helena representative to learn more. Always follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Shane Repeat here, folks. This segment of AgriTalk brought to you by our friends at Dakota Ag Innovations, makers of Dakota Shine, the best way I've seen to fix faded paint. Go to dakotashine.com or call 888-996-7801.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you could join us today. And it's Monday. That means it's time for a conversation with Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. Happy Thanksgiving, Greg. How you doing?
Hey, happy Thanksgiving to you guys too. I'm doing well.
Excellent, excellent. It's a big week. Not only do we have Thanksgiving, but you've got another auction.
We do. Our Machine Repeat monthly online auction is tomorrow. I tell you folks, we got some nice looking equipment. You might want to go check it out. If you're looking for a combine, there's a 2019 Case IH 6150, only 335 separator hours on it from Farmer City, Illinois. Really sharp rig. If you're looking for a low-powered semi, how about a 2011 Kenworth T800, 29,121 miles on it. It's from the good folks at Quality Truck and Trailer out in St. Edwards, Nebraska. A couple interesting tractors, Chip. There's an AGCO Alice 9815, front wheel assist, 4,300 hours out of East Prairie, Missouri. If you're looking for a good four-wheel drive tractor, folks, there's a John Deere 9320. 5,398 hours out of Bay City, Wisconsin. Same seller also has a 9-shank John Deere 2700 Ripper. And then a tractor from our friends at Midwest Machinery up my way in central Minnesota. There's a 2013 Kubota M135GX with a loader. So just hop over to machinerypete.com. Sales starts to close tomorrow morning. And, some good equipment there for you if you're looking here year-end.
Right. No. What are the rules on the auction?
Absolute sale, no buyer's fees, folks. So that's kind of by design how we want to do it. And every month, I think the next sale is Tuesday, December 21st, already getting some good equipment coming in. And actually, if folks, if you have something for sale, just reach out and contact us. There's ways we can seamlessly get your equipment right on the next Machine Repeat monthly online auction, help you get top dollar out there for it.
Excellent. Excellent. Just go to machinerypete.com and to get started on that, right?
You bet. You bet. Yep. And there's our toll-free number and the email on there. Just get in touch. And our folks, Machine Repeat team, happy to visit with you about the process. So,
fantastic. Fantastic. Okay, let's get to it. What do you got for the pick of the week?
Oh, man. It was, again, hard to pick this week, Chip. Just some blistering hot prices. But I got to go with Saturday out in Grover Hill, Ohio. It was a farm retirement auction for Keith Dunafon. By our good friends at Sifka Real Estate and Auction out there. 1992 John Deere 4455, mechanical front, 3,628 hours, one owner, $86,000. Now that is the second highest auction price I've ever seen on a Deere 4455 sold without a loader. The only higher one was back 3 years ago, December 8th of 2018, here in Kenyon, Minnesota. Marrying Auctions sold a 1990 model with 1,904 hours on it, one owner. Yeah. So again, 86K with 3,600 hours. Wow. And I tell you, that wasn't the only hot item on the sale, Chip. They also had a sharp combine, a 2005 John Deere 9560 STS, 2,736 engine hours. That went for $70,000. For perspective, the average on a 9560 this year is $53,617, and that average, by the way, is up 18.2% this year. But even maybe hotter than the 4450 on the sale Saturday there in Grover Hill, Ohio, Chip, was a 2014 John Deere 1590 20-foot no-till drill for $52,000. That's an all-time record high for a 20-foot. The only 1590 drill I've ever seen higher was a 30-foot. That was back over 6 years ago on a sale in South Whitley, Indiana, at $60,000. But again, $52K, wow. And we did have another
one. Like somebody decided it's time to get cover crops on now.
Exactly. And then for you Massey Ferguson fans, the sale Saturday also had a 94 Massey 261 tractor. Beautiful little rig, 1,788 hours. Went for $10,000. And how about this? That's the highest auction price, Chip, on a 261 Massey in over 20 years. Got to go back to March 21st of 01, Oakland, Illinois, when I saw one with only 351 hours for $10,750. So $10,000 Saturday in Ohio. That was pretty strong.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely strong. Okay. Let's make our way back towards Iowa and Minnesota and make a stop in El Paso, Illinois.
El Paso. Yes. This could have easily been the pick of the week. Also, our great friends at Sullivan Auctioneers online farm retirement auction for Ronald Fever. And I thought, when I wrote a blog yesterday, I thought, boy, that's about the best name for an auction I could think of right now. Fever. Yeah. And Ronald had nice stuff. He had a 1986 John Deere 4450 two wheel drive, just under 5,400 hours. That went for $49,500. Fifth highest auction price ever in a two wheel drive 4450. Ronald had a 75 John Deere 4230, a little over 3,200 hours. That went for $31,000. But it wasn't just the, you know, the 70s and 80s tractors. He also had a 2012 John Deere 8235R, just over 2,100 hours at $164,000. And again, just for perspective, the average auction price this year on the 8235R is just under $124,000. And that average is up 14.6%. So there again is that theme, that kind of average up 12 to 20%. Yep. So yeah, really strong sale there Saturday in El Paso.
Right. Okay. Let's see. There was a John Deere 9470R on that sale too, right?
There was. It was a 2015, 1,442 hours on it. That came in at $251,000. So again, really strong money. And I found that sale interesting, Chip, again, because it's not just, again, the pre-tier four, pre-def older tractors that are red hot,
right,
which they certainly are. But it's the, you know, the 2015 model at $251,000. But in either case, you're drifting into the availability factor. The inventory levels are pinched on the dealer lots. And, of course, the supply chain snafus. You maybe even can't get that new tractor planter, skid steer, whatever you're looking at. So it is pushing used values up at auction big time.
Right, right. And I'm glad that you're adding the percent increase over a year ago on the average selling price. Because that's such important perspective, Greg. I mean, that 15 to 18%, I'm hearing that all the time now.
Yeah, it's just the way it is. And folks, you can look at all this data. It's free. Just go to machinerypete.com, click on auction prices. And when you do any search on any model, up on the top, there'll be a little thing. It'll say average pricing. Just click on that. Then you'll get this data. Okay. You can actually look back 20 years on like a, you know, any older piece of equipment. It's kind of fascinating to see the ebbs and flows in value.
Right, right. Okay. Talking about an item that might be driven by availability, this auction that's over there in Bluffton, Indiana, tomorrow.
Yeah.
Has got that 2015 Chevy pickup on it. Oh boy.
Yeah, it's going to be a hot one. It's a 2015 Chevy 2500 HD LT, 14,389 miles on it. This is on a farm retirement auction, Longaberger Farms. Schrader Real Estate and Auction has the sale. Just go to schraderauction.com. But some beautiful tractors on the sale too, Chip. A 2013 John Deere 9460R, 1,675 hours. A 13 John Deere 8310R with 1,340 hours. That could be really hot. 2013 Deere 8285R, 1,575 hours. Combine, beautiful. 2014 S670 Deere, 921 SEP hours. So again, that's selling tomorrow. Schrader Real Estate and Auction in Bluffton, Indiana. Check it out, folks.
Yeah, big auction. Good grief. What else is coming up this week?
Well, a couple sales I'd point out from our good friends at the Steffes Group. They have one this week on Wednesday for Hefner Farms, a little retirement sale in Easton, Minnesota. Again, nice equipment, 2009 John Deere 9330, 3,200 hours. 2001 John Deere 8310, 7,462 hours on it. 1989 John Deere 4555, just over 7,400 hours on it, second owner. But I tell you what, Chip, Steffes Group has a sale coming up December 7th in Kalmar, Iowa, retirement sale for Clinton Freyna. And I went down and interviewed Clinton. So we've got a Machine Repeat video, preview video coming out. This sale, 2014 John Deere 6150R, 238 hours with a loader. 2010 Deere 8225R with 990 hours, pre-def, pre-tier 4. How about a 2008 John Deere 8330 with 945 hours? Beautiful 1973 International 1066. He's got a 2001 Freightliner FLD 120 with 188,000 actual miles. Stay tuned for this preview video, folks, because hearing Clinton talk about his equipment, it was a really fun day I spent recently down there in Calmar, Iowa.
Awesome. Awesome. Nice little town there, isn't it?
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Folks, just check it out. All the info on those sales is at stephisgroup.com.
Okay. And hit us one more time with where we get information on the Machine Repeat auction.
Yeah. Just go to machinerepeat.com, folks. You'll see the link for the auction tomorrow right at the top, whether you're on your cell phone or iPad or desktop. And again, I believe it starts closing in the morning. So, yeah, we're just very appreciative of everyone's support of our sale. And again, if you're looking to sell, hit us up and we can get you on our December 21st sale.
Greg Peterson, Machine Repeat.
On your farm, achieving better yields is always the goal. But replacing current equipment with new isn't always an option. Bring new life and new technology to your current equipment with a John Deere Performance Upgrade Kit. It all starts at your local John Deere dealer. Schedule an inspection today to see how a customizable performance upgrade kit from John Deere can unlock the potential of your existing equipment. Search John Deere Performance Upgrade Kit to learn more.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beej, this wheat market, another very impressive move in the winter wheat markets.
Absolutely. You know, the tight global high-quality wheat supplies, and the latest is the heavy late-season rains in Australia just hurting crop quality there and causing more of those quality concerns on the global supply front. So while there's plentiful global supplies, the high-quality wheat is in shortage, and that's fueling the price advance here. New contract highs, new multi-year highs in both the SRW and HRW contracts and spring wheat futures. They pulled back last week, but they're strongly rebounding here to kick off the week.
You know, it's interesting. There are times that the winter wheat markets will reflect feed value, but that is not the case this time around. It is reflecting that high-quality exportable wheat supply that we're trading around the world. Take us over to soybeans. What's going on there?
Yeah, big move, double-digit gains to kick off the week. So kind of slow buyer interest through overnight session. Actually, two-sided trade there, but boy, we hit daytime trade, and the buy stops are triggered and strong gains. Soy oil is running sharply to the upside. Meal, which has been the upside leader here recently on the lysine concerns, is actually showing just a mildly firmer tone in most of those contracts.
Right. We've got corn futures 3 to 5 cents higher there. Take us over to livestock. We got plus signs in the cattle complex.
Yeah, cattle on feed report last Friday was neutral, but we're off and running again. So extension of the gains to the upside, I think anticipation that we'll see strength in the cash market again later this week. And then hog futures, they're working to the upside as well with the front end leading the way.
It's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
For 20 years, the Milk Business Conference has brought together the most progressive dairy operations. Make sure you're there for 2.5 days of content to positively affect the profitability of your dairy. It will be held at a new location November 30th to December 2nd, 2021, in person at the Paris Las Vegas Hotel and Casino. Put your strengths to work as we continue to navigate this ever-evolving industry. View the agenda and register now at www.milkbusinessconference.com.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Find farm equipment on Machine Repeat's November 23rd online auction. No reserve, no buyer fees. Start bidding now. Auctions.machinerepeat.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you are with us today. Davis is with us as well.
Yes, sir.
And joining us right now, Jeff Cooper, President and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association. Jeff, it's good to talk with you again.
Well, thanks for having me this morning, Chip.
You bet. You bet. It was fun seeing you last week down in Kansas City at NAFB. It's always good to get face-to-face again, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It was a wonderful event and really enjoyed seeing everybody that we hadn't seen for a couple of years there. It was a good time.
Yeah, absolutely. Real good, real good. Okay. So while we were down there, and I just need help understanding exactly what this is, what it means to the marketplace, and it's EPA's decision to delay the compliance deadline on blending from when?
Yeah, well, more than 2 years ago. And so each year, Chip, refiners are supposed to prove to EPA that they have complied with their renewable fuel standard requirements. They have to show EPA that they blended the required volumes of ethanol and other biofuels. And when COVID hit, EPA gave refiners some extra time to show that they met their 2019 and 2020 blending obligations. And so now EPA last week decided that they want to extend those compliance deadlines again and give refiners even more time to show that they complied with those standards that are, in the case of 2019, almost 2 years old now.
It seems like at least the 2019 compliance issue should be settled by now. What does it mean to the industry that they have not had to prove that they blended what they were required to blend?
Yeah, so we do. I mean, we have a situation now where EPA is not really forcing refineries to show that they are blending the required volumes of renewable fuel. And their excuse, or you know, what we would expect EPA to say is, hey, there are still 57 small refinery exemption petitions that are pending for 2019 and 2020. And so we can't force refiners to show that they complied with the RFS until those petitions have been decided. And so our response to that would be, well, you know, okay, let's get on with it. Let's decide those petitions. Let's get those small refinery exemptions adjudicated. And we believe they should be denied. Those petitions should be denied. Get it done. Get those things out of the way. And then let's close the book on 2019 and 2020. And by golly, let's get the 2021 and 2022 RVO proposals out. So we've got a real mess here just because EPA appears to be sitting on its hands with deciding these, pending small refinery exemption petitions that are more than 2 years old in many cases. That's really the first domino that has to fall before EPA can do anything else on the RVOs.
Jeff, the EPA, this EPA, has shown a tendency to deny those SREs, correct?
Well, that's right. They have decided one petition so far. That happened a few weeks ago, and they did deny that petition. So we saw that as a very encouraging sign. We've also heard point blank from this administration that the days of giving refinery exemptions out to every small refiner that asked for one, those days are over. President Biden, committed to that during the campaign, and EPA has reaffirmed that. So we're just waiting for them to now follow through on that commitment and deny these exemptions.
Okay. Well, if it takes them as long to decide on each of the next 57 as it took them to decide on the next one, they're never going to get this job done, Jeff. I mean,
well, that's right. And the signal it's sending to the marketplace is, look, refiners can basically continue to ignore their legal obligations to blend renewable fuels until some undefined time in the future when EPA might finally decide, hey, it's time to enforce the law. Nobody knows when that's going to be.
And then when it comes to blending requirements for 2020, 2021, I mean, some of the smaller refineries, the less, as they've been described to me, the less efficient refineries out there are really kind of getting a little cocky about admitting that they're not submitting RINs, and they're essentially building a short position in the RIN market. Jeff, this is it's going to be a tough challenge for them, isn't it?
They're rolling the dice, Chip. You have got some refineries on the East Coast that have said, look, we're done. We're not buying RIN credits anymore. We're not going to blend renewable fuels. We are consciously deciding that we are not going to comply with a 16-year-old law that requires us to you know, either blend renewable fuels or buy credits from refiners that are blending renewable fuels. They're just folding, crossing their arms and saying, we're not going to do it. And they're hoping that the administration is just going to bail them out because a couple of these refineries happen to sit in Delaware and you know, in other places that the president is quite familiar with. And we're confident that's not going to happen. I think that's a game of chicken or a gamble that they're going to lose, and they're going to lose big time.
Okay. All right. You mentioned the RVOs. We're still waiting on the renewable volume obligations for what years?
Yeah, so 2021 and 2022, we still don't even have proposals for. And right. And yes, you heard that right. 2021 is almost over, and we don't even have a proposed RVO out yet.
It makes it impossible to manage, which is what former EPA Administrator Andrew Wheeler said in the Wall Street Journal. If you don't have the RVOs out there, you can't even manage the program.
Yeah, and what former Administrator Wheeler failed to mention is it's his fault that we don't have a 2021 proposal out. That was his job to make sure that we had 2021 standards in place before he left office. And he failed to do so. He threw up his hands and said, oh, you know, woe is me. We have COVID and we're leaving town. So we're just going to leave a big mess for the next guys to clean up. And it's taken them a lot longer to clean it up than anybody was hoping for.
Right. So getting the RVOs for 2021, obviously important. For 2022, that gives us an idea of what we're looking at for next year. But the reset issue, Jeff, in 2023 and beyond, where do we stand on that?
Yeah, that's the other big wrinkle in this whole thing is Congress only established specific volume requirements through 2022. And beyond that, it's up to EPA, or EPA has much more discretion to set volumes for renewable fuel blending in 2023 and beyond. So that's going to require another regulatory process and a rulemaking process from EPA. That's a proposed rule that we need to see very soon. They're already late in getting that proposal out as well. So we are hopeful that EPA is going to propose that early in 2022 and have that rule finalized well before 2023 kicks in, so the marketplace has some certainty and predictability, and there's stability in the marketplace when it comes to what is expected of the entire supply chain in 2023 and beyond.
Okay. All right. Let's go back to those small refiners out on the East Coast that are playing that game of chicken by shorting the RIN market. How are they getting their product into the marketplace?
Well, I mean, it's PBF, it's Monroe Energy, it's the same refiners that have been coming after the RFS for years. And what they're doing is they are making gasoline blend stock, and then they're claiming that they don't have the ability to blend ethanol with that gasoline themselves. And they're selling the gasoline blend stock into the pipeline or into the terminal. And then blenders and marketers are the ones that are adding ethanol before it goes to retail. And so they're claiming that they just don't have the ability to comply with the RFS, and they don't have the ability, they don't have the means to acquire the RIN credits. And we know that's just not true. We know that there are merchant refineries across the country that don't have blending assets, but they've figured out ways to comply with renewable fuel standard. It's not that hard, right? I mean, you figure out an arrangement with a downstream blender or marketer that basically requires them, or you set up a partnership where they are returning RIN credits to you when you're selling gasoline to them and blending it with ethanol. So it's absurd for them to argue that they can't comply with this program and for them to just throw their hands up and just hope that they're going to get bailed out, I think is absolutely crazy.
Right. And the reason that I ask that is because they're putting out a product that's the minimum standard, right?
Right.
I mean, it's coming out of there like 83, 84 octane, something like that.
That's right. Yeah, the gasoline that they're making at their refineries, Chip, could not be sold at retail because the octane value is not high enough. It's sub-octane right. gasoline. It is specifically tailored. It's made to be blended with ethanol. So you're right. They have no path to the market. They have no way to get to retail without ethanol being blended with that fuel.
Yeah, and that's the case across the industry. I mean, one way or another, yeah. that ethanol is going to be used. And I'm just left scratching my head again about why Big Oil fights it so hard, Jeff.
Well, and they need the octane. They yeah. know that ethanol is the lowest cost and cleanest source of octane. So we scratch our heads too. It's a good product, and they will quietly tell you that in private, but boy, they sure don't like to talk about it out loud.
Man, we'll have to get you back on and talk about that more later. Thank you, Jeff. Jeff Cooper, RFA.
Every year, humic loss makes it harder for crops to absorb applied nutrients. Resurge from Helena is a low-dust granule that delivers humic compounds to improve nutrient uptake and plant growth. The Resurge granule's superior hardness and uniformity withstands pneumatic applications, allowing for even distribution in your fertilizer and across the acre. Energize your soil and elevate your crops. Contact your Helena representative to learn more. Always follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Find farm equipment on Machine Repeats November 23rd online auction. No reserve, no buyer fees. Start bidding now. Auctions.machinerypeat.com.
It's never too early for Justin Timberlake now, mama. Yeah!
AgriTalk. Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. Davis Michelson here with Chip Flory. Chip.
Yes.
Awful lot of head scratching discussed with Jeff
yeah.
Cooper there. And here's the thing, man. The legislators and those in favor of the green solutions, be it
okay.
solar power gen, wind farms, hydro. I saw a thing they're going to hook up in Guatemala. They're going to hook up a town to a volcano for power generation.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's quite the deal. The idea that we've got to burn down the old system first,
yeah,
before we have the new technologies in place, I don't see it succeeding. To begin with, I don't think that the total burn down. We're never ever going to use gasoline again. Everyone's going to drive electric cars.
Right.
Not going to happen. Not going to happen.
Right.
There's going to have to be a market driven transition to right. some degree there, but
right.
you raised a really
EVs,
good point. Yeah,
on the EVs, real quickly, I had this conversation over the weekend with some family members, and it was basically they've told us to go the EV route, but have failed to give us any workable,
right?
Workable products.
Mm-hmm.
Things that
mm-hmm.
we can actually use every mm-hmm. day that will go on electricity. And then when you look at some of the requirements on the chargers,
yes,
to get things set up in the house,
mm-hmm.
well, you better set aside a $10,000 bill or something close to it to get that done too.
Yep, yep.
It's
Not
crazy.
To mention, you still have to generate that electricity. It doesn't
– Yeah.
You don't just put a thing – in the wall and you plug it in and there's electricity in there now.
Right.
The other thing is, and you and Jeff kind of started down this road toward the end of your conversation, Jeff Cooper from Renewable Fuels Association.
Yeah.
Big Oil could really
yeah.
be part of this green thing. And they've adopted, they're at least friendly toward certain renewable fuels,
right.
but
right.
why not ethanol?
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost
I don't get
like
it.
They've, it's almost like they've been fighting the fight for so long that they've refused to not fight
mm-hmm.
When it comes to ethanol. And you're exactly right. Look at the investment that refiners, petroleum refiners, are making in the U.S. soybean crush industry. so that they can get vegetable oil or bean oil to make renewable diesel. Look at the investment that refiners, energy companies, have made with ADM at a couple of ethanol plants to produce sustainable aviation fuel. You know, Valero was in the ethanol business. I'm not exactly sure if they've got any anything left that that is operational for them or not, but they were in the ethanol business at least for a period of time. So they are in position and making investments on renewable diesel, on sustainable aviation fuel, because they see the writing on the wall when it comes to the use of fossil fuels in those areas. Well, how do they have the blinders on when it comes to ethanol? And the thing is, they don't have the blinders on, because they know, even those refiners that are shorting the RIN market understand how they benefit from ethanol, because they're keeping their refining costs low by putting a dirty minimum grade blend stock into the system that they know has to be blended with ethanol to make it a usable product at the pump. So why would you know, it's, I don't understand the fight. They're willing to be a partner on renewable diesel, willing to be a partner on ASF, but they've been fighting the fight on ethanol. It's almost like they don't realize what is happening. You know, is the retail side that different from the refining side, that, you know, that they don't care? The refiners, you know, take it or leave it. This is what I've got. I don't understand. It's really difficult for me to get it. Now, you know, it used to be a follow the dollar situation,
right?
Because those refiners were making their money off of pumping oil out of the ground. Well, if we were offsetting use with ethanol, it was lowering total demand for the crude oil at the very beginning. So that was keeping prices down on crude oil, which kept their profits down on crude oil. So, you know, that was a follow the dollar thing. But now, if ethanol has become part of the system, it's in there. The system falls apart without it. How do you fight it now? I just don't understand.
I keep, as you're talking, I keep having these images of that scene in Rocky where his eyes swollen shut, you know? And he's like, just cut the eye. By the way, a quick correction: not Guatemala hooking up a town to a volcano. It's El Salvador, the Canchagua volcano in southeastern. It's only proposed, but man, I mean, what if that sucker goes off? Like, your lights will be super bright for just a little bit, and then super dark for a really long time, bro. Yeah,
you know, if there's one thing I've learned, Davis, it's don't trust the volcano.
You got to be careful with volcanoes, bro.
Just look back over history. Okay? They're temperamental, unpredictable.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like wind.
Ashy.
Yep.
And sunshine.
Solar. Yeah.
And all that stuff, too. They can be angry and unpredictable. Good stuff, Davis. Thanks, buddy. Come back this afternoon, 206 Central. We're going to have a conversation with Steve Georgie. He is the president there at Allendale. We're going to get into the direction of these markets and what we should be doing about it. Tomorrow morning, Senator Ernst from Iowa and Senator Fisher from Nebraska, right here on AgriTalk. I got the anchor for getting into something.